In this episode of the Chrysalis Conversations, I'm joined by the amazing Rena Friedman-Watts, and we're going to be discussing how you can get into the media. We're going to be discussing Rena's story. We're going to be discussing all about how to navigate when life chucks you some curveballs, to embrace your network, and just so much more. You're going to love today's conversation. Hi, I'm Nikki Collinson-Phoenix, business owner, serial goal-getter, adventure seeker, chaser of dreams, humanitarian, and believer that anything is possible. In this podcast, I will bring you conversations around transforming your business and life through strategy, mindset, kindness, compassion, freedom, happiness, and contribution for myself and for many others who have walked their own path of transformation and discovery. Because life is short and life is precious. And in the time you have on this earth, I want to give you the tools so that you too can believe anything is possible and for you to achieve your own version of success and happiness, both in your work and your life. So are you ready to shine, transform, and live your best life? Then welcome to the Chrysalis Conversations. All right, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me today on our episode of the Chrysalis Conversations podcast. I am absolutely thrilled to have an amazing guest for you today, all the way from Chicago. She is the producer of Megawatt Productions. She is Rena Friedman-Watts. Hello, lovely. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Woohoo! I'm excited to be here. I love your vibe.
Really, really happy to have you here. So, now, Rena's got a really, really interesting story, and I'm so excited that she can come and share it with you today. She is all over the whole media thing, production, TV, all of that stuff. And so for any of you listening to this who are thinking, I want to be getting involved in this stuff, or I should be thinking about this stuff in my business, or this is something that's been an aspiration of mine, but I don't know how to get started or what to do, this is the lady for you today who's going to share with you some really cool tips and golden nuggets to help you get into this kind of environment. But before we even get to that point, Rena, how the hell did you even get on this journey? What is your story? Like, how did you come from being baby Rena to the producer of Megawatts Productions? What took you on that journey?
Oh boy, it has been a long journey and it's constantly evolving.
Yeah.
I think it was in me from a young age, you know, even in my family, my grandfather always wanted to work in showbiz. My dad still is like, maybe we can have our own show. And they just really encouraged being creative and being in that industry. And I took to it. So as a young girl, I even liked to put on little performances for my family. I would put my parents and my grandparents on the couch and I would turn on the jam box and I would sing over it. And
I love that.
Yeah. So from a young kid, it was something that I was into. And then that led me to auditioning for a youth performing arts school in high school. I didn't actually get accepted, but I auditioned and then re-auditioned, took voice lessons, took piano lessons, learned how to read music, got in on the second try, and really put myself in a competitive environment with people who were more talented than me.
Yeah. And sorry to interrupt there, but it really reminded me of like my time of like bringing up my daughter. I've got a 10-year-old now, and I did a lot of drama and acting and performance when I was younger, not so much in front of my family, but I was on the stage doing anything and everything. And it wasn't necessarily that I loved performing, but actually what I realized and why it's so lovely to hear that your family encouraged that and that I've tried to do with my kids as well, is it doesn't matter if you don't particularly want to be on stage or perform, but there were times in my life when I've had to public speak, when I had to give presentations, just like in business and life and school and university and whatever. And actually just how much of a massive skill set you gain when you have in confidence, when you have that kind of background, isn't it? And that upbringing.
I am so glad you brought that up, because reflecting back on it now, I'm able to see how all of those things have lended to what I'm doing today. So my mom put me in modeling. She put me in dance lessons. She put me in piano lessons. Anything that I was interested in trying, and sometimes even when I didn't want to continue trying, she really exposed me to so many great things. Yeah. And I am now trying to do that even as an adult. Like, me and my husband took improv comedy together, even when I was pregnant. When I was pregnant with my first kid, I had worked as a post-production supervisor for Nanny 911 for 3 seasons, but I didn't know how to edit. So I went back to school at 28 years old and pregnant. And I actually wanted to learn how to push the buttons. And I took Final Cut Pro and I liked it so much that I took the second level of it. You know, I also, like you were saying, you know, I liked being behind the scenes. I didn't so much love being on the stage, but even now, to get better at my craft, to be a better host, to be a better interviewer, to be a better marketer, all of those things. That's why I created a podcast. That's why I signed up for Toastmasters. That's why I do improv. That's why I like to be interviewed and the interviewee.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you have to constantly work on your craft in order to be good, in order to be comfortable, in order to have conversations, in order to try new things, in order to grow your business. All of these things stack upon themselves.
Exactly. It's just such powerful work. And so you got all of this stuff and you got into this school, and then what happened?
Yeah. So I was there for 4 years. I had a very difficult teacher who I actually never felt accepted by because I didn't get in on the first try. And I was surrounded by people that made it to Juilliard and, you know, Nicole Scherzinger, who was, what show was she on? It's like blanking right now, but she's been on Dancing with the Stars and she's worth $300 million now. And, you know, I was amongst such talented people, really. Like, some of them have become famous. And I felt like they had more talent than me, and I started like doubt myself. But I will say, my senior year, the final week of your senior year of high school, you get to audition for a bunch of different colleges. Like, there's a room full of executives or, you know, college like placement
talent
people.
Talent scouts.
Yes. And you sit in a room, and Nicole took me into the music closet, and she was like, look, I'm going to sit in the front row. She was like, you've got this. She was like, oh my God, Rena, you've been studying this for 4 years. She was like, look at me. Don't look at them. She like sat in the front row. I'll never forget this. And she like bobbed her head, and I focused on her, and I got two smaller schools. Yeah. And I ended up taking one, and I got a full ride to my first college. And it was exactly what I needed. I needed a smaller school where I could, you know, be the big fish in a small pond for once.
Yeah. Yeah.
And kind of be nurtured and pave my own way. And so I did that for a couple of years, but actually the high school that I went to was like more competitive than the college that I ended up at. And it like wasn't enough of a challenge, and I needed more. So I ended up transferring to a bigger school. I went from 2,500 students to 38,000. So I transferred from University of Charleston, where I had a full ride, to Purdue University, which was much more competitive. And I decided that as much as I loved singing and, you know, I loved music, that it wasn't really like something that lit me up, like when I was on stage. Yeah. So I decided to try to get a job in radio. So I walked into a radio station, which was more behind the scenes. And it's more like what we're doing right now. It's like one-on-one conversations where you don't like realize the audience, right?
Exactly.
Much more comfortable.
It feels more intimate, isn't it? There's an intimacy that's really nice about it.
Oh, I loved it. So I walked in, I was like, I want to work in radio. And then turned out somebody was like leaving that week. They needed somebody to work at 5 a.m. and work weekends. And I was like, I'll take it.
Oh, there. I'm in.
I'm doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I read the news and the weather for an NPR station for 2 years on campus.
Was that really cool? Because I have one of the reasons why I started the podcast, but this podcast, which is now like coming up a couple of years ago now that I started the podcast, was because one was to help the people that I work with. That was first and foremost. But on a personal level, I had secretly had this dream of being on the radio. Like, I've always dreamt of having my own little radio show. And I realized, like, you know, at the moment, that's probably not going to happen. But why don't you do a podcast? Because one, you can help people. Then it kind of also has a little radio feel about it. How was it actually being on the radio? Like, was it cool?
Oh, I loved it. I loved it. But
I've been interviewed on the radio so many times, and I'm really, and when you get interviewed on the radio, often it's like any interview, isn't it? It's not as long as you think it's going to be. It's like all of a sudden you're done and you're finished. And I'm always like, oh man, I was really enjoying that. I didn't want it to stop. And was it really cool working in the radio?
It was. And I worked there. I'm going to totally date myself, but I worked there as they were switching from running the station manually to automated.
Yeah. Okay.
So there were moments of dead air. There were moments of having to start a record or put on a CD and
just fill a gap
and troubleshoot and say things on the fly. Now it's so much easier because.
But don't you find though, when you've got a background though, like of improvisation, how like people that are okay with improvisation are really okay in dead space. You just find, you see other people just completely freezing, but you're just like, well, I'll just waffle some stuff and it's fine and it's all great. And I'll just make it up and fill it in the gap. And it's all those little skills that you get that you realize actually they have these things like then that you think, actually, that's really helpful. I've got that skill.
There's been so many moments of like that throughout my media journey. Like even when I worked at Nanny 911, you know, we had worked on a segment or worked on an episode. You know, and then it goes to the execs and they're like, yeah, actually, we don't want to air that one tomorrow. So call in the editors. Everybody's working overnight and we're going to take the one that we were going to air the week after. And we're going to put that one ahead of the one that, you know, we just voiceovered. We just mastered. We just, you know, made sure it was all ready for broadcast. And then you're working third shift and around the clock. And, you know, it's crazy. And you just, that's how it goes. And yeah. There's that. And what else has been just crazy? Or, you know, like when I worked at Jerry Springer and a guest backs out and you've got like a live studio audience and you've got to take the next segment and you got to brief them to get out there or, you know, things like that.
Right, at what point, what was the first big gig that you got then? Because like you've got to this school, you've gone to this bigger school with like thousands of people. And then what happened then?
Yeah. So I got a job on campus, worked for the radio station for 2 years. Yeah. Then I got an interview at WGN, which is a pretty big radio station in Chicago. I thought I wanted to work in radio again, went up there, was pumped. You know, I had gotten that through like the alumni office on campus. It was like, you know, the one big job interview that I had, drove up to Chicago. It was a couple hours from my college, interviewed. There wasn't an opportunity available as I was graduating and, or I didn't get it. And then I saw a flyer that Jerry Springer was looking for interns in the same courtyard.
Wow. That's
amazing. And so that day when I was up there interviewing for the other job, I walked across to NBC Tower, got a hold of the intern coordinator and started there 2 weeks later. So I took an internship. It was unpaid. I was like, I am going to
make this
happen.
I would literally pay you to give me this opportunity. Like, seriously, if you're going to open this door for me, I'm there.
Oh, I was so all in. I literally like found an apartment off the internet and slept on some guy's couch for two months, like living out of a suitcase, knew no one, was eating out of cans. I mean, this was so crazy. And, you know, but I didn't know Chicago. I didn't know Chicago. I was living in a terrible neighborhood. I was taking two trains to get to work. I was working around the clock. But I was determined.
But that's what it boils down to. You did that because of determination. And, you know, there's a lot of people that will say that they want to achieve a certain thing. And you'll say, we'll make it happen then. And they're not determined enough. They don't want it bad enough. Because sometimes when you want something bad enough, you will sleep on someone's couch. You will go to a strange place. You will eat out of cans. Like, you will make those sacrifices because you want that end result bad enough. And if you don't want that end result bad enough, you know, you won't do it. So you didn't want it bad enough because that's why you're not making it happen. So, you know, credit to you for doing that, really.
Oh, it was crazy. And I was like, so the job of the intern was essentially to take the guests around town. You got like $200 bucks petty cash and you got to take them to diners and House of Blues and all around Chicago. So I'm like learning the city alongside the guests. I'm learning
So you're giving them tours whilst working out where the hell you're going. I love it.
It was amazing. And I'm like, you know, a lot of these people, like I was a small town girl from Kentucky, so I could like relate to some of these people, like coming to the big city, you know, getting this fantastic opportunity. Like I felt like I was doing that too. So I became friends with the guests. I found out what kind of stories they were looking for, who made a good guest. I was listening to the associate producers on the phone, who was loud, who was getting the best guests to come. I emulated them. I wanted to be them. I became them. Yeah. And at the end of the first season, I got the opportunity to produce my own show. And then mm-hmm. the first show went really well. And so they gave me another chance to produce another one. The second one went well. And then the next season, I got promoted to producer. So I went from intern to associate producer in one, well, from intern to producer in one season. And then I produced an entire season. And then they pay you hiatus like over a summer, which is like a freaking dream. And then I like went to Italy and blew all kinds of money because I was single and making money that I had never had like that. And it was amazing. I went to Italy. Like you're saying, you're a digital nomad. I went to Italy for a month. I went to Sardinia. I like ate expensive food and stayed in really nice places and just, oh, it was that so crazy. Right. Yeah, it was a dream. And then I came back, I produced the season opener for a third season. And looking back, I like had a life-changing moment. But one of the guests came up to me and was like, how can you live with yourself? And, you know, at that point in my life, I was so self-absorbed. Like for me, it was just all about, you know, like making it and like working in TV. Yeah. And like, I didn't really think about destroying people's lives. And the executives were like happy with the story I produced and, you know, the crowd went wild, but I was like, man, I was getting totally burnt out. Like looking back, I was totally getting burnt out. I was like living and breathing the job, working like, you know, 80 to 100 hours a week. Like my days were all running together and I had gotten my fill of that. I was like, how many of these stories can I listen to of people like cheating on each other where that then becomes your life? You know? So I quit the job, took the white box, packed up my crap, had no backup plan. And was like, God, I got that job easy. I'll get something else easy.
I'll just get another one.
Not so true. Although one thing that was really great is that since I worked on, you know, enough episodes of that one big show, it did qualify me to get into the Producers Guild of America. Mm-hmm. And when you're in the Producers Guild of America, there's a lot of internal job postings that you find out about from other members that aren't posted elsewhere. So I did apply to a guy literally for an entire year. I think I drove the guy completely mad. He was like, okay, finally I have like a job that I can give you and take a risk on you. Like I interviewed with him after applying seriously so many times. I think I drove him crazy. And he was a post-production producer on Nanny 911. I applied to him for like a year straight and he was looking for a post-production supervisor at night. And so again, it was like determined. I had no post-production experience. I didn't even know how to output a tape at the time, but I'm like, I will learn it. If I can produce the Springer show, I can do that. Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, I interviewed with him at like a 6 PM. He was like, can you start tonight at 7 and work till 7 in the morning? I was like, yep. And I did that for like almost a year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which led to three seasons of that. I mean, there were other shows in between there, but I'm telling you like some of what I did to work my way back up.
Yeah. Yeah. And so at what point did you start Megawatts Productions? Like where did that come in on your journey here? Cause at the moment, like I'm looking at your life and I'm seeing like you're learning your craft, but you're equally busting your ass.
Oh yeah. So crazy. So I ended up working, you know, as an executive assistant when I first moved out to LA from Chicago, worked for some seasoned producers, did that, you know, on and off in between freelancing and taking field interviewer roles, associate producer roles, assistant editor roles, you know, bouncing from pilot to the show getting picked up to then, you know, getting on Nanny 911 for three seasons. And then I met my husband, like third season on Nanny 911, got married. We got engaged after like 4 months, married after eight, had three kids in 4 years, took a little mommy break. When the kids were in preschool, I started inching my way back into working. So I was doing research for a court TV show, which I got on Craigslist, by the way. Like, so crazy.
That's amazing.
They were looking for a researcher where we were living. And we had moved from California back to my hometown for a few years because my husband got a better job there from where we were living in California. And so while the kids were in playgroup, I would go to courthouses in Kentucky and Indiana. And then when we moved back to Chicago, so in three different states, I would go to courthouses. And I don't know if you know this, but if somebody files a small claims case, that's open public record. And so if you're working for a television show, you can get a letter saying I'm working for this court TV show and, you know, please let me have access to those files. And I got in with the court clerks. I got all their cell phone numbers. I treated it like
I could casting. See you doing that. I could see you doing that. I could
oh,
see
yeah.
you just being
so I would call like, them
yeah.
and be like, is there a big stack of cases this week? Because some of the courthouses were like an hour and a half drive from where I lived. I was hitting the whole area, you know? Yeah. And then I'd be like, hey, are there any other court shows there today? You know, I was like in with them where I knew the day to come, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah, yeah.
I was getting the cases before they were entered into the system. Like I knew where people were filing them and
you
what
were in the inner
they were putting them in
at this point now, weren't you? Like you were in the fold.
I was into that. And it was like the news junkie in me, like back to my NPR roots of like finding the good story. Like I'll tell you a couple good ones that I found. These are just insane. Yeah. So I had never even heard of this. Somebody was suing someone over receiving the wrong crossbred animal. He had bought a Z donk, like a Z donkey, and he received a Z horse. And I didn't even know you could crossbreed animals in the States. But yeah. So somebody was suing over receiving the wrong crossbred animal. I'm like, oh my God, yes. So I like called the producer. I was like, I got a good one. This is like, you never find this, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Because he wants something that's going to be different, don't you? That's entertainment. If it's the same stuff over and over again, that becomes boring, doesn't it? But that's like, whoa, this is really out there. Really, you know, this is going to be good TV.
I mean, another one too. And this goes back to my, you know, working in a talk show and what stories they wanted to hear. It's like, you know, the majority, 95% of the cases in small claims are people suing over not paying their rent. I mean, unless you, but the thing is, sometimes it's not about the story. Sometimes it's really about the guest. You can have, I mean, Jerry Springer, the whole show was cheating, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But
you'll have memorable guests. You have memorable guests though, don't you? Like you can have a dull story, but you can remember if you have a guest that's got some kind of personality, has got some real character.
Oh yeah.
That's going to make the story so much more interesting, isn't it?
I had a hate your mate story. Basically a mom hated her daughter's boyfriend to the point where the mother and daughter would just like completely go after each other. The mom and the daughter were such good guests that the boyfriend didn't even matter. The story didn't even matter. They were insane. They were so, you know, heated with each other and had so much venom towards each other. The story did not matter. So it's the same thing with like these cheating stories. Like if you have somebody that's been married for 20 years, they've got four kids together and, you know, some chick has been banging on the door for the last 3 or 4 years, that wife wants a piece of her. You know what I mean? So it doesn't really matter that it's the same cheating story. It's the people involved. And that's the same thing even with podcast casting, right? Or with putting together a good segment, you're looking for emotion. You are looking for open book guests that are like no filter.
Cause that's interesting. You want people to have no filter. Otherwise, if it's too restrained, too conservative, it's just not interesting, is it?
Oh God, I love emotion. I want to cry. I want to laugh. I want to scream.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've been going around stalking courthouses. You've got all this stuff. You're like, okay, I am getting good stories. And then what happened next?
Yeah. So that was like my re-entry into being able to work again after having three kids in 4 years. And I was like, ooh, I like making a little bit of money. I like having my own like thing that I'm interested in doing. Like I can do the mommy juggle. It gave me like a little bit of confidence. And then my husband was working for a telecom company. And I think just, I either went to a holiday party or he talked about me or kind of like what I was up to. And then they were like, oh, we could use somebody like that in marketing, you know, like, so they created like a program manager role, whatever that even means. But like, essentially what I was doing was they needed somebody to plan in-house lunch and learn events and somebody to like create newsletters and somebody for like internal communications. I was like, oh, I can totally do that. But to be honest, like I wasn't so into the product. So I did that for like a year and a half and tried it and had some good moments. Like one thing that was great that came out of that is that LinkedIn started really becoming a tool that I became comfortable using, there. Yeah. That is where my love of LinkedIn began, because I was like, whoa, okay, they want, you know, these companies that are Chicago based, like Groupon and, you know, I don't even remember all the other companies that they wanted, but a lot of bigger Chicago based companies, their headquarters were here, and they wanted heads of customer experience or chief financial officers, or they gave me the roles of the people and the companies that they wanted to attend their events. I'm like, okay, cool. Mm-hmm. You type in, you know, the title and the company and you befriend those people. Exactly. Yeah. It comes up, you befriend them. You're like, hey, I'm putting on this lunch and learn event, you know, wow. So impressed with your profile and the work that you've done. You're exactly who I want to connect with. You know,
you had the gift of the gab, didn't you?
Yeah, you had the gift of the gab. I've got the gift of the gab. It's funny because I did my strength finder and like my number one strength was like winning people over.
Yeah.
So I was definitely playing to that strength in that role. So my job was to befriend these people, get them to come to our event. Right? Easy as pie.
Yeah.
I was like, this is crazy. Like literally you can become friends with anyone. It's like an endless database of fun. So I started doing that, but then I was like taking a train to and from, had three kids. It was really hard to get home in time for their bus. And like, you know, if a meeting went long, I'm like having to negotiate with the nanny. It just wasn't working. So I took a job, a similar role. I took a bit of a pay cut and then I was like, oh, let's try the finance industry. You know, it was like, it was like sales and marketing director for a finance firm. I'm like,
your CV is interesting, huh? Your resume. That is interesting.
I could do that, right? Try it for a year. See. And it took me about, I'm going to say like 7 or 8 months to even like fully wrap my head around like all of the financial products. But the thing is like marketing is marketing, right? Like you can make anything sound exciting. Yeah. And my role there, again, connect with financial advisors, connect with CPAs. I literally connected with hundreds of financial advisors on LinkedIn, got them to come to lunch and learn events, marketed the event, made it look like it was happening, hired the cameraman, found the venues, you know, oh, I love marketing. Yeah. So didn't really matter what I was marketing until I realized I didn't really believe in these life insurance policies. I was like, meh, right? But
not the most exciting product, is it? As an ex corporate finance, life insurance is not the most exciting thing to market, is it?
Yeah, I didn't just, I so much did not really believe in it. And so I met an event producer while I was working in that financial firm and she was working in the entrepreneurial space, like putting on events for Gary Vee. I was like, I had hired her to help me put on one of these like financial events and her and I hit it off. And I was like, I'm totally thinking about like doing the entrepreneur thing. She was like, I'd love to hire you. I was like, oh, really? So she was the first one who did.
I'm listening. Yeah.
She was the first one who did. She was like, hey, I could really use some help booking sponsors for this event that I'm putting on with Gary Vee. There should be about 2,500 people there. I've already got some sponsors on board. I could send you a list of potential sponsors. I'm like, hell yeah. Like I'm doing that. I want to go there. I can do that. Right.
Yeah.
So she sends me this list. No instructions. She just completely let me be me, figure out the messaging, rinse, recycle, repeat. Freestyle it, right? And it was like, once I got one, I was like, oh, hell yeah. Okay. Once my message worked on one, then it's like, okay, then you just do that again, right?
Yeah.
So I figured it out, got a couple sponsors, found my way to Toronto, met Gary Vee. I was like, oh, hell yeah, I'm on my freaking way. And I just networked and networked at that event. Some people that I'd met at that event turned into future work. That's where like the entrepreneurship thing started to happen. Then I was like, oh my God, not everybody can book sponsorships. That's hard. I was like, maybe I should say I do that now. Right. So that was the first thing I tried. But then I was like, okay, I can't just do this for a percentage. This is way too much work for just taking a percentage of what I book people. So then I was like, hey, I only work with influencers. I only work with seven-figure coaches. I only, you know, then you start figuring out your niche, like who can afford to pay you and give you a percentage, right? So then you start like figuring out your services. Then I'm like, do I even really like doing this? I'm like, this is so much damn work. I was like, maybe I should help these influencers fill up their events. I'm good at that. You know what I mean?
So then
I started doing that. And I worked for a couple seven-figure, you know, coaches and helped run their Facebook groups, grow their podcasts, get them guests for their podcasts, fill their events. And then I was like, dude, I'm bringing the people to the party. I'm like, I should do this for me. I should do this for me.
I was going to say, you should be bringing people to your party, hey?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it became. That is totally what it became. And when the pandemic happened, I had four kids at home. I'm like, oh, okay. Yep. I've been working for others for 20 years in so many various capacities. I was like, people are coming to me in my DMs, asking me to help them with their LinkedIn profiles, asking me to help them with their posts, asking me, you know, to help them in so many different ways that I can help them. Now I just need to figure out like what I like doing. What are my price points? How many people do I want to take? You know, how many of those people do I need to take in order for this to work? Yeah. And it's just like constantly evolving. And I'm still doing that. So I started a podcast.
Was this where the birthing of Megawatts Productions came in at this point?
Yes. But here's another thing. So I even had an uncle like a couple of years ago, and he was doing a car show, and he was getting like 1,000 people to show up on a Monday night. So he came to me and was like, hey, like, I think I could sell a lot local sponsorships, like businesses around this area that this is their demographic. He was like, you know, offered me a cut. And I was like, I can do it. Yeah. So I ended up booking like a dentist. I mean, who's owning these nice cars, right? Like people in their 60s, people in their 60s to 70, right? Like that need teeth work, right? Yeah. So I reached out to like some dentists in the area, and like I got a cosmetic dentist that wanted to sponsor the event. And then there was a radio station that was a sponsor of the event. So I talked to them. I got set up as an agency. I ended up selling the dentist not only event sponsorships, but radio time, and then got a cut of that. And then I like had to get set up as an agency, and then I learned how to do that. So it's just, you know,
You are a lady of many talents. Let's just lay it out there. You are a lady of many talents.
Thank you. So there were lots of steps in setting up my business. One, you know, you have to figure out how people want to pay you. So, you know, working as an agency, you know, doing my uncle's car show, I had to figure out how to be an agency so that I could sell radio time. So that was one step in setting up my business. When I created a podcast, I was like, okay, now I need to actually have a website. Like all of my work I was getting completely in DMs. Like I had no freaking website. You don't even need a website if you're just helping other people. But, you know, I had to figure out how to do a website. I had to figure out how people want to pay. So the radio sponsorships, I had to set all of that up and become like a legitimate business, get a business account, you know, all of these things, right?
All of that stuff, all the stuff. Yeah, you just want to do the work. But actually, when you go into having your own business, there's all this other stuff you've just got to get done in there.
Yeah. So the radio sponsorships actually was a big piece in me forming Megawatts Productions. And here's another big piece is that I created a podcast of my own about a year and a half ago called The Better Call Daddy Show, because my dad is my biggest cheerleader, my biggest support system, who I go to for all advice, right? So I create this show, then other people start coming to me and like wanting me to produce their show. So I knew a camera guy here locally in Chicago. He was a camera guy on a show that was being shot here. He was like, hey, if you need somebody to cast your show, somebody to write the script, somebody to supervise the editors, Rena's done all those things. So I get brought in on this show. I ended up producing like 60 episodes. Now the company that's paying for the show, they want you to have a business account. They want me to pay the voiceover talent. They want me to pay the editor. And that all comes out of me as an agency, right? So then you got to figure out how to 1099 people. You got to figure out, you got to work all these pieces, right? So now all of a sudden I've got like contractors, but this is how you grow your business. These are the steps. And it is, oh my God, it's such a journey. It's not something that happens overnight. And you really have to figure out like what you like doing and like what is worth your time. I mean, especially because I'm a mom of four, like I have such limited time.
But it's amazing what you have achieved though. Like, do you look back now and just think like, I think, do you feel proud? Like, because you've been on such a journey, but finally it's like one of those spider diagrams, isn't it? I've taken a bit of that and a bit of this and a bit of this and a bit of this. And in the middle, I've created Megawatts. This is who I am. I've been able to create this business where it takes all of the amazing parts that I've learned and that I really enjoy doing. And I've managed to fuse it all together to create this amazing business now. Like, do you feel like finally you're there? You know that I know you. You're going to keep evolving.
I never do.
I know you're going to keep evolving. And in fact, I've been doing like an entire rebrand of my whole business this week, because I've just gone through this huge evolutionary thing. And I'm a great believer that we all evolve, and we evolve all the time. And it's a natural progression of life that we learn new stuff and things happen to us and curveballs come in and we get more wisdom. And at some point as business owners, that naturally that evolution is going to come down into your business. So your business is going to evolve. I don't think there's any point where we go, I've reached my end point. We're constantly evolving. So it would be exciting to sit and chat with you again in 2 years' time and say, what the hell are you up to now, Rena? Because I know that there's something else is going to have shifted in 2 years with you from where you are today.
Oh, no question. Things shift every month.
You know what, though? I think it's exciting. Like, I get really excited about, you know, I love the unknown. I know some people hate the unknown. I love the unknown. I love, like, you know, with our travel stuff that we're doing right now, I genuinely have no idea where I'm going to be next week right now. I absolutely have no idea where I'm going to be in 3 months' time. In a year's time, I have no freaking clue where I'm going to be in the world. Like, and I absolutely love the fact that no matter what, my business is coming with me, the family is coming with me, but all the other details, I love the fact that I have no idea. And I'm excited by what possibility and opportunities and things may be out there that I just haven't found yet. And I think you're someone that, you know, if opportunity knocks on the door and you think, oh yeah, this is interesting, you're going to grab it.
Which is
really great, because a lot of people fear doing that, don't they? And they get held back and they never reach their full potential because opportunities come their way and they're too kind of fearful to take a leap of faith and just to see what happens, what comes out the other side. Now, you, with all your knowledge in that, are literally a media hosting guru of gurus of all that experience that you've got. So one of the things that you really wanted to say that sort of help people and the listeners here is to kind of give them some tips and advice if they want to get into the media or if they want to go into hosting, whether it's on radio, whether it's podcasting, etc. like that. What kind of advice could you give the people listening here if media is something that they're interested in, or it's their jam, or it's something that they would like to get involved with, or even just starting a podcast?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. To be perfectly honest, I honestly feel like everyone today should have a podcast, because you create all of these amazing relationships with people. You get more comfortable speaking. It is going to take you probably, I would say, unless you're really good, 50 episodes before you feel comfortable just being on the fly or even getting on bigger shows. So if you create your own show, it's just, you're going to learn how to write intros, outros, reach out to people, what works, what doesn't work. And you can totally be yourself, and you're putting together a portfolio that then you can present to others. I recently reconnected with a fellow podcaster, and he was like, hey, I would love to have a co-host of my show. I've been doing my own show for a couple years now, and I'd love to have a woman's perspective, or I'd love to have a co-host on occasion to bounce ideas with. The more podcasters that you connect to, the more practice you get, I think that is a great way to break in. You're going to create an audience. You're going to create a brand.
What I think is really great about podcasting is one of the first things that you said just now was about when you create your own show, you have artistic license on that show. Like, that is your show. Make it unique, make it different. Don't feel like your show needs to be like someone else's or fit in, you know, that, as we say, the cookie cutter model. Like, you get the opportunity to design it, format it, bring the guests in that you want, talk about the topics you want, brand it how the hell you want, speak how the hell you want. You get to literally have artistic license, and you can do that. You don't need permission to do that. You haven't got to go and be auditioned. You haven't got to go and apply to somebody. You literally get Zoom out, or, you know, even voice recorder on your flipping phone, you know, get it out, get it online. It costs, it's absolute basic. You can do the whole thing for free if you really want to get you started. You can start a podcast for absolutely nothing. And your voice is now going from the local area. You're now suddenly having the opportunity to be on a global stage, and then it's down to you to put it out there. But there's absolutely nothing to stop you doing that. Yes, except yourself.
I love what you just said. And truthfully, if you want to co-host a show, there's so many opportunities for that too. Reach out to podcasters, ask them if they're ever looking for. I guarantee you, if you reach out to people who are just starting out and you're like, hey, what do you think about like having a sub host sometime or a co-host sometime?
You know, that's the thing that I would like to do sometime, you know, as a podcaster, I would love to co-host sometimes because like I sit there even when I listen to podcasts or even I listen to radios and I love when there is a co-host thing. I love the way that you can just banter away. You can like, you can pitch off each other, you bounce off each other, you bring a couple of different dynamics into there. And co-hosting is a great way because if you can get on and co-host on someone else's show every so often, then you get the joy of the exposure, the practice, the experience and the fun, but without necessarily the responsibility of it being your show.
100%. And another thing you can do if you don't want to create an entire podcast and you don't want to take on the responsibility of that, do IG lives, do Facebook lives, do restream, get LinkedIn live. There's so many tools now that are free for practicing.
Yeah.
Join Toastmasters, take an improv class, whatever gets you going or improves your speaking ability. I think that everyone should try that.
Yeah. What do you think about people who are maybe a bit more, that want to do it, but are also a bit more introverted, for example? So who don't necessarily like they're listening to you and they're saying, I hear you, Rena, but pressing that button makes me want to projectile vomit.
Yeah. So I've had actually clients like that. And what you can do is, if there's something that you want to speak on, like you're a subject matter expert in something like insurance, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Go on Castbox, type in insurance, see who's speaking on that, see what questions they're answering, and write yourself a little script of like five questions that you could answer. What would your opinions be on what these other experts are already talking about? What would your opinions be on those subjects?
Yeah.
Right. Everybody has something that they could talk about unprompted, right? Like I could talk about LinkedIn for a half hour with no preparation. If you work in insurance and you do insurance all day long, I guarantee you there is something about that that you can talk about. Or if you're an EMT, or if you love sales, or if you love social selling, right? See what others are doing in that space, see what they're talking about and think about what your opinions would be on those subjects. I think listening to other experts speak and how they do it is actually a really good way to get started. Like even if I'm going to help somebody else produce their show around a certain subject matter, I see what the competition is doing. Like I research other shows in the same space to give them ideas of what they might want to talk about or how they would, you know, maybe accompany those thoughts.
And also, you know, when I was back in my old corporate life, I used to help because I used to public speak an awful lot to like big global companies. And I used to try and get some of my team members to come and share some of the presentation stuff with me to try and give them, you know, I just want you to talk about this I'll do the full hour, but I want you to just take this 5-minute segment and just own this little piece. And I would have them literally, you know, I've got to rush to the bathroom, I'm breaking out in a sweat and all of that. And I really felt sorry for them because it was then that I fully appreciated how much I didn't feel like that because I had been on a stage, because I did find I was very confident speaking in front of people. I've never experienced that fear, but it is a genuine thing for people. And when it comes to, you know, going, being on lives and things like that, one of the things I say, and I don't know what you think, is sometimes is our mind monkeys tell us a whole load of horrific stuff just to torment us about why we're not going to press that live button. And some of the guys I work with, every so often we used to do Facebook live challenges when I'd like, right, I'm going to create this Facebook group. It's a safe space and all of you are going to come in and I'm going to give you some tasks to come and press the live button on to go and do. And people actually started doing it. I'd give them a little task like, today I want you to talk for 1 minute on this topic.
Yes.
And that, like on Monday, it would be like a 5-day thing. And on Monday, they're literally in pieces. And by Friday, they are rocking it out, right? Because they've realized that actually the fear that their mind monkeys was telling them, it was never as bad as what they were telling us. So one of the things that I've always thought is quite a good idea is like set up a Facebook group, an empty Facebook group, and just go live into it and just practice into it and just see that actually it's really not that scary. Maybe stick a couple of mates into that group so that you just start speaking with a couple of people to start off with until you have the courage to actually go and press the button. But I guarantee anyone who's listening to this, who's thinking, I'm terrified about going live, and yet I realize that video is something that's really important when it comes to my social media and reach and everything, is just one day take a leap of faith and press that button, because it will never be as bad. And that first one might be a bit shit. It really doesn't matter. Like, yeah. I'm a great believer in imperfect action is better than perfect inaction, you know? And just press that button, get the first one out of the way. It might not be your best work. It really doesn't matter. Your next one will be better. And the more you do it, the better you will find it. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, I mean, you can even, like you were saying earlier, you can take your phone and record yourself.
Yeah.
It can be as simple as that. Like, you can talk to yourself for a minute a day about different subject matters. But I do like what you were saying about giving them a topic, because people that I have worked with that have a hard time telling their story, if you tell them what to say, if you know them well enough, if you've prepped beforehand and you can give them what to say, I think that's a really good way to start. So yeah, if you give them a task, another thing we do in Toastmasters, which is really fun for people that are just starting out, we do a round robin where like each person can ask a question.
Okay.
So yeah, you just do like icebreaker questions, and then, you know, the last person that speaks asks a next person a question, and you try to hit a minute. It's so crazy, but like in the beginning, a minute is a long time. And then, you know, your first speech that you give is 5 minutes. So you go from 1 minute to 5 minutes, but yeah, just getting comfortable talking on the fly and being able to say more than you would normally say. Just one thing that's so healthy about improv is whatever you say is okay. Whatever you say, as long as you say it and you go all in on what you're saying, is great. Like, nobody's going to say it's not true.
It is. And also when you do improv, like if you know, when you're doing it, is actually, I've had people that have said like, oh, I was doing this live and I forgot to say this, this, and this. And you're like, the people that are listening have no idea you forgot to say this, this, and this. Like, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. And so I think one of the takeaways I would really like you guys to listen into this, to take away from it, is like, just go for it. Like, listen to Rena. Like, Rena's literally just gone for everything that has crossed her path. She's just gone for it, you know? And if you're sitting there now and you're, you know, lots of things I'm feeling like from talking with you, Rena, is like, if someone is listening to this podcast right now and they're thinking, I'm flipping miserable doing what I'm doing, like, change it up, you know?
Try to collaborate with other people. I would say that that is such a good way to start. Start making friends with podcasters, or if there are people that you love, like when I first started my podcast, the first guest that I had, even though she's not the first guest that I aired, the first guest that I had was somebody that I went to college with that, like, I've been following her on social media for 20 years. I knew that she wouldn't care if I didn't do a perfect intro. I knew that I could just completely be myself with her. If I needed to restart or start multiple times, she'd be cool with that. She gave me like 2-3 hours of her time, was just so flattered that I wanted to practice with her. So practice with people, even if you don't air it, you know, I think that that's a really good thing to think
about. But you know, aside from the media stuff, one of the learnings I think people are going to get from listening to you today also is to grab every opportunity that comes your way. And if you're doing something with your life right now that is not serving you, that is not feeding your soul, that is not making you want to get out of bed and get involved, is actually take action steps to take a different path. Like, get out there, see what else is out there, see what other opportunities are out there, and make a choice to change the path that your life is going on. Because, you know, life is just too short to be doing something for years and years and years that makes you miserable, isn't it? Like, whatever it is.
And you know what? like lately I've really been pushing myself to read more, exercise more, drink more, and it compounds. There's a compounding effect on that. So, you know, start with 10 pages, then 50, then 100. Mm-hmm. I literally read an entire book on Saturday. You know, that's and amazing. The more books that you read, the more podcasts that you listen to, the more people that you collaborate, that will make you better.
It will build your network. Build your network. As they say, your network is your net worth, isn't it? Build that network. Rina, you have shared so much stuff with us, and your journey is just your life story thing is so interesting. I hope one day there's going to be a book in there of all the different things that you did. What I would love you to do now, if it's okay, is I'd love you to take part in our little 10 question get to know you. Are you up for it?
I'm up for it. Let's do it.
Okay. All right. It's just a little bit of fun just to kind of mix things up a bit and people to get to know you a bit more. So we're going to start with a really easy one, Rina. I'd like to know your favorite book if you have one. Could be fiction, nonfiction. You've just said you're reading a lot. What's your favorite book so far?
Oh my gosh, so many. I just read a really fun one. It's called Party Girl. Oh, who was it by? And I'm forgetting her last name, but it's called Party Girl.
And somebody called Anne. So if you Google it, hopefully it'll come up.
I just read it. I literally read it in 2 days. And it's just it was candy. Good. It's honestly it. Candy. But yeah, it was about somebody who was a party girl and lived in LA. And it's kind of like the ins and outs of that. And then she got sober. But when she got sober is when she actually got the opportunity to write her own column. And she wrote this column about her party days, but she was actually writing about her party days sober. And I thought that that was so interesting.
That's good. Oh, I'm going to look up that one. So if you could only eat one meal for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Oh, probably sushi. I love sushi pretty much at all hours of the day.
When you were little, when you were a kid, what did you want to be when you grew up?
I wanted to be a movie star.
Did you?
I did want to be a movie star. I even wrote a book about it in kindergarten. It was very, short book, fantastic. But
I love it. That's fantastic. If you could have dinner with one person, they can be dead or alive, someone historical, someone in your family, someone famous, someone not famous, who would it be if you could have a meal with them?
I love Katie Couric. I love her interviewing style. I love that she's been reporting since I was born. I think that she got super vulnerable.
Sit around the table.
Oh, she got super vulnerable in a new book. Yes, I would love to have dinner with her.
Okay, fantastic. Did you have a nickname when you were little?
That is a funny question. Yes, and not one that I am proud of, but I don't know why, but there was a boy that used to call me Rina Freak Out America, maybe because I'm like really animated.
I love that. Well, listen, it can be too bad. I'm a Nikki and I was known as Knickers at school. So it's not so bad. At least you weren't calling off the underwear. So yeah, I was Knickers. So are you a mountain cabin, a beach house, or a city penthouse kind of apartment? Which kind of person would you be?
I think I would prefer a cabin. I grew up going to summer camp for 7 years where I did stay in cabins.
No, I really envy the fact you guys have summer camp. I would love when I was a kid to have gone to summer camp. It's just not a thing that happens in the UK. And I've always envied you guys for this summer camp thing. That would have been right out my street. And I love that.
I do love going in the woods in a cabin.
So name one thing on a bucket list that you haven't yet done that you still like to do. Is there anything on there that you're like, I'm going to do that one day?
Oh my gosh. The thing that would scare me the most is definitely like jumping out of a plane.
Oh yeah. Do that. I've done it a few times. Do it. Make sure you do it. Yeah.
That would
I've
really
done two
be
solo parachute jumps and two skydives and a wing walk. I'm a bit of an adrenaline junkie, Rina, to be honest.
I am so, too, but that one would really scare me. I think that would definitely push my upper limits for sure.
Then you absolutely have to do it. Now you've declared it as well, that you have to do it. Listen, you've dived into so many things. I'm sure you can do that too. Right. Tell me, is there a country you haven't yet visited that you'd like to go to?
Yeah. So one that you're visiting, Portugal, it just looks so majestic. Like I would really love to see that in person.
Okay. Make sure you get that done too. What's your favorite downtime activity? So when you're not working, not being mom, like you're just like, I've got a bit of me time. What do you like to do?
I do love to curl up on the couch with a hot drink and read a book.
Yeah.
I've gotten so into that, and I was not a reader until late. Yeah.
But you are now. You are now. And once you get the bug, and I'm really lucky because I've always been a reader. And I just sit there. My husband's not a reader. And I sit there going, oh, I've just finished a book. He's like, but you just started it. And I'm like, yeah, but I finished it now. He was like, you pumped through so many books. And I said, I love reading. I just love it.
Oh, if you can find one that you want to get to the end of, that is so great.
I read loads of biographies. They're my things. I really like biographies. I find people just really interesting. I find, you know, every so often I mix it up with a fiction book, but I do love reading about people's lives. People are interesting.
Okay, I got to tell you, last Saturday, I read, I think it's called The Devil's Arithmetic. And the reason I read it was because my son needs to read it for school. And I was like, hell, if I read the whole thing, then I'm going to be able to tell if he read it. And maybe we can have a conversation about it. Like, what did it bring up for him? And what did it bring up for me? But when I started talking about what it brought up for me, he was like, don't tell me, don't read the book. You know, don't ruin the book. But yeah, it was actually one of those books that I read in one day. It was only like, you know, around 200 pages, but still, it was so good.
Okay. I'll have a look at that one.
It was about the Holocaust. So, yeah.
But it's an interesting, that's stuff I'm interested in, that stuff. I think we all need to be interested in that stuff. And we all need to know about that stuff. So I'll definitely look that one up. Last one. Have you got a favorite movie or a couple of movies? What's the one that if you want to sit down and have a listen to, what's your go-to movie?
A couple, you know, I am the typical girl that like love Dirty Dancing, but also Pump Up the Volume. Like I loved that. Did you watch that with Christian Slater? I've watched that like 100 times.
But Dirty Dancing is a legendary. You know, Patrick Swayze is a real loss to the entire world. Like,
yes. Totally.
Yeah. That is literally an iconic movie of my generation right now. So yeah, that is a really good call. Well, you survived the 10 questions. Thank you so much. We know a lot more about you. We know you love your sushi. We know you'd be in a mountain cabin. We know you want to go to Portugal. We know what your movies are and your books are. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And Rena, thank you so much for sharing all your knowledge, your stories, everything. It's been an absolute pleasure to hang out with you in Portugal, with you in Chicago. It's been literally an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for giving up your time to come and hang out with me today.
This was amazing. You are such a great host. This is really a fun conversation. Thanks for having me.
No, you're welcome. And guys listening, I hope that you really enjoyed that. Isn't she an amazing person? Like, just love listening to her, and her story is fantastic. And I hope that it's given you some inspiration now to sit there and think, I may want to start thinking about getting a podcast going. I may want to start stepping into the media. I may even have just listened to Rena and thought, do you know what? I'm so bloody miserable in my job. I'm going to start looking for another one. If Rena can do it, so can I. So I really, really hope you've enjoyed this episode today. And wherever you are in the world, have a lovely rest of your day, and I will catch up with you on the next episode. Take care now. Bye.